Thanks for tuning in to the hottest talk radio show around, providing an open discussion for some of the most important social issues and trending topics today, from personal growth or spirituality to sex and relationships. No subject is ever taboo. So prepare to be empowered, enlightened, and entertained during another episode of the award-winning Let's Face It with Will Strayhorn and friends. Real people, real topics, real talk.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Let's Face It with Will Strayhorn and friends. It is Tuesday, March 26, 2019. I'm in studio with my girl. Hey, Boo.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. This is Shanika Bell of On Point with Shanika Bell.
Yes, how are you?
Doing well.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. We were sitting here talking about, we're glad to have Mr. Harold Leefall on the line already. And then we have Mr. Brian Bushman coming up later on in the show. But, you know, we were talking about all of that for the past couple of weeks, what it is to be enough. Because both of us, you know, we have things that we want to do, things, you know, goals and things that we want to accomplish. And I know I've been, you know, pretty transparent with you, telling you that sometimes I just feel inadequate. And then, you know, Harold Leefall, he was on the show, I think, right before he launched his national movement of I Am Enough. And I just thought it would be a good time to have him back. Because you and I both, we had different views on what it meant to be enough.
Yes.
And I still don't know if we have what it means to be enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just don't feel like I'm enough for what, you know, and I know God has gifted me with things to do, and I can hear other people tell me, like 10 people will tell me, you can do this. But I don't listen to the one person who says anything. Now, and I let that sit in my spirit, and then it'll stop me, prevents me, it holds me back from doing a lot of things that I know that I should be doing, and really a lot of things I know that I can't.
Right. I think for me, I think sometimes I know that I'm enough, but instead of me taking the initiative to do things that I know that I can do, I would encourage somebody else who's doing the same thing or who wants to do the same thing, I would encourage them and tell them to do. And then I'm left sitting with the, why did
you You're pushing everybody to be mobile, to show the movement, and you're not doing it.
Yes. And then,
you don't think you can do it?
I think that's part of it. I think part of my feeling is that I can. What if I get to a certain point and then something happens? Because I'm a thinker and I'm an analyzer. So in my head, all the pieces have to fall in place before I put action to it. And if at any point it doesn't fall in place first, then I do away with the whole idea.
Abort mission. Okay, well, you know what? We have Harold Leefall. He's an empowerment strategist. He's an author, a speaker, and entrepreneur. He has traveled the world sharing his message of perseverance and success. I personally follow him. I know that you follow him now. We got your T-shirt as well.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go ahead and bring onto the show Mr. Harold Leefall from I Am Enough Empowerment. How are you, sir?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing well.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on the show to share your message. Like, I don't know if you heard what me and Shanika were saying, but I have a feeling that I constantly feel like I'm not enough. People always tell me that I'm my own worst critic, and I know that I talk myself out of doing things, and it's basically because sometimes I feel like I'm inadequate. And then Shanika was saying her situation of, you know, being, she's good at pushing other people to do things, and she's an awesome encourager. I also say that in fact. But when it comes to Shanika actually following through and doing things, Shanika has a million and one excuses. So, you know, exactly what does it mean to be enough?
Well, you know, Will, most people, if we're really honest, we all go through phases of not feeling like we're enough, particularly when we are looking to go to the next level or looking to do something new. And I know for me, even in spite of the fact that I was able to start two multi-million dollar businesses, I was able to do that still at most times feeling inadequate, feeling like an imposter, feeling like I wasn't enough. And so much of the self-talk that we have going on in our head, a lot of that comes from experiences we had in our childhood when we were told what we can't do and what we can't become. And even though in our hearts we believe that we can do it, some of that old programming negative thoughts shows up in our lives just at the point of when we are getting ready to or thinking about going to the next level. We tend to overthink and talk ourselves out of doing the very things that we know we're capable of doing, but we talk ourselves out of doing it because we don't think that we are have what it takes, or we feel as if we venture out, what if it doesn't work out? And I know when I look at and I study successful people, one of the things that I've learned from them is that their hesitation isn't there. When those doubts and self-critical thoughts come, they're able to press through them quickly. What happens for most people, we kind of get stuck in it, and we soak in, you know, overthinking it and just questioning and not moving forward, which is one of the things that really hinders so many talented, qualified, skilled people from moving forward is that negative self-talk that goes on in our head.
So I was reading this book. I just started reading. I posted on Facebook, and I was listening to Steve Harvey Morning Show, and he said that one of the books that he attributed to his success is a book by David Schwartz called The Magic of Thinking Big. I don't know if you are familiar with that book, but it was talking about two of the things that I think I need to always not feeling enough. For like 20 years, or 25 years, I've been a hair and makeup artist. For some reason, I just felt like there was a call in my life that God was calling me to more. So I went back to school, and I had a goal of me on stage speaking and empowering people. So I went back to school, got my master's in human services counseling and life coaching. And I was just going to, my dream was just to start sharing my message, sharing my story, pretty much similar to what you're doing. But it's like somewhere along there, somebody told me that I was too old to be starting. And for some reason, I believe what they were saying.
Yeah.
So every knockdown that I got, every rejection that I got, I attribute to the fact that I'm too old, and then that, you know, too old to start anything new. And also past mistakes. I just felt like I was limited because I made too many mistakes in the past. So I always felt inadequate, especially when I was working with somebody that was young. What's your advice for people who just do not feel, you know, like they're enough? What do you want to share?
Well, you know, one of the things that I always say is that your network determines your net worth. And so it's very important if you are wanting to go to the next level and really want to get out of your comfort zone and really be everything that you want to be, is to be careful about your circle of people and who's speaking into your ear. Because so often folks are speaking negative thoughts and ideas in our ears based upon their own self-limitation. And when we hear it, there's a part of it that resonates with us. It resonates with us, and we are often prone to believe it because then it acts as validation for what we're already thinking. But in our hearts, we know that that's not the truth, but they're validating something that we are already thinking. And so one of the things that I was so fortunate to have failure early on in my life, having filed bankruptcy and losing everything. And when in the process of losing all of my material things, I began to lose a lot of friends. And I began to lose a lot of people that were, quote-unquote, friends that really were not folks that could be a part of my elevation, meaning that they were kind of stuck where they were, and they were satisfied there. And so it was a blessing for me to go through what I went through because when you don't have anything to share, people will start disappearing from your life. And so for me, what that allowed me to do is really begin to think about what it is that I wanted to do with my life and where did I want to go with my life. Because oftentimes I think we get so distracted by comparing ourselves to other people's journey, listening to the negative commentary of other folks around us, that it can be exhausting and draining to us being able to move forward. So for me, folks leaving my life really became an opportunity for me just to focus on myself, to figure out what it is that I want. And I think for most people, if we could just really get clear and focus on what it is that we want without all the need for approval from other people, we would have the focus and energy to really move our lives forward.
But are you finding that that is the like in your seminars, your workshops, the people that you encounter, is that the reason why people feel that they're not enough because they're not really clear? Or is it the opinion of other people? Or is it the combination of all of that?
It's a combination of it. See, people will attract the people. Based upon our beliefs and what we're feeling, we'll attract people that will validate our beliefs, our feelings about, you know, what we are thinking about ourselves. And so it becomes a combination of things. And what I find in our workshops and seminars is that so many people in their hearts have these big dreams and aspirations, but they don't have the support system to help them stay focused, to help support them, to affirm them. And so it becomes very draining and frustrating to them because they know in their heart what they want to do, but they don't have any evidence of it. You know, they just have people telling them, oh, you know, that's going to be too hard, or, you know, my friend tried that and it didn't work. And so they're hearing this, hearing all this information, they're taking it in, and it's causing them to doubt themselves and causing them to become frustrated, because it's very frustrating when you know in your heart what you want to do, but you're not making movement toward it.
So, hello, how are you, Harold?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. So what would your suggestions be when people, okay, because I feel like sometimes it's like, I know what I want to do. I know I have, in my mind, I have a plan, but sometimes that's where it gets stuck. It gets stuck right in my mind. And like I said earlier, I just feel like if the plan doesn't make sense from beginning to end in my head, and if the pieces don't fall in place, I just do away with the whole idea. And sometimes I do think that it may be, I think that social media plays a major part in it. I think that it comes down to comparison, or I see somebody else who's doing the same thing that I'm thinking about. Like, will it be better than that? Is it going to be worse than that? Like, what if I don't come out on top like they are? What if I, like, I just kind of got this idea from them and it didn't work? Like, those, I think, are a lot of things that people are battling now because social media is so influential to people.
Yeah.
So what would you say to a person like that?
You know, for me, one of the things that one of the things for me is that I always tell people just to be clear on why you're doing something and what you're doing, your why and your what. The how will come as you're progressing and moving forward. For example, when I started my first business, I knew it was going to be successful, and I had ideas of it becoming a multi-million-dollar business. I didn't know how it was going to happen, but it was in taking an action and moving toward it that things started to come into play. Some people, the resources that I need, always say, you know, the poet Ludacris says, when you move, I move just like that. And I always say to people, when you move, God will move just like that. God won't bless us until we're moving, until we're in action. Our job is to stay focused on the vision and the dream. God can work out the how. Our goal is just to get forward and moving toward the dream and the vision.
Okay. Did you get that?
Yes, I can receive that. Because
we were having a conversation. We were trying to get clear on, number one, if what we were feeling really meant that we didn't feel like we were doing something.
Right. Because I think that you had a more, I think that your feelings of not being enough were more, I'm not enough. For me, it's like, I feel like I can do it
in
my head. It's getting it out of my head. And that's where I get stuck. That's where, and I don't know why. I can't figure out why I can't get past that point. It's like I can visualize it, I can see it, I can see the product moving, but just connecting the two to just do it.
That's the key, because so often we get stuck trying to figure out all the pieces, if I have to figure out all the pieces, or if I try to figure out all the pieces on my first $1 million contract, I would have never gotten started because I had never made $1 million. So how am I going to figure it out if I haven't done it? And so it's a faith wall, and it's a trusting and knowing that, okay, when I'm moving and I'm paying attention, I'm listening to that internal guidance that we all have that we sometimes don't pay attention to. You know, it's that internal guidance that you call somebody that you don't want to call. You're like, why don't I call them? I call this person or seek out this mentor to help me. And that's another piece that really critical to the success of my business, because a mentor has been where you want to be and where you want to go. And so oftentimes, we're trying to figure it out all by ourselves. If you're trying to figure it out all by yourself, you don't have enough information. You don't have the experience. But a mentor can help to accelerate your forward movement. They've been there. And that really was the turnaround for me in my first business. The mentor, he was telling me just simple stuff that I had never even considered, because she had the experience. She had been there. And so it really helped to accelerate, you know, those tools and strategies. And it wasn't even anything major. It was just like making some simple tweaks in what I was doing that helped to accelerate my business.
You know what? I've wanted a mentor for so long, but it has been so hard for me to find somebody who I've had someone who agreed to do it, but then they backed off. I don't know if it's the age thing, but like I've joined organizations, and instead of them mentoring me, they want me to mentor them, like in the music. Like I go there seeking help, but I'm thrust into positions where they want me to help other people, and it's younger people. I don't know if it's a situation that I'm older, trying to, you know, get into a new business or do things, which certainly I can mentor people. But I am in dire need of mentorship right now. How did you find your mentor? How do you find a mentor?
Well, you really have to expand your network and put yourself out there. You know, go to places where you think that the person that you would like to be mentored by might be, whether it's conferences, whether it's meetings, or your chamber of commerce. You really got to put yourself out there. And that's one of the things early on in my business I struggled with, because I had put this label on myself that I was shy and like speaking in front of people, and that hindered me so much, because, you know, I was missing opportunities to connect with people who could really help me move forward. You know, one of the things that is so important in business is currency. And there's two types of currency in business. There's performance currency, which means what you're able to do, how you're able to produce the work that you're able to, the fact that you're able to do the job. And there's relationship currency, and that's who you know and who knows you. And it's your relationship currency that will allow you to close the deal and get the opportunity. Because when I started out staffing agencies, there were hundreds of staffing agencies out there. And so how is it I was going to be able to penetrate the market? And it really was about my relationship.
Yeah.
And we forget that piece. Sometimes we're so focused on thinking about, okay, all the pieces of our business. But if you don't have those relationships to help open those opportunities and help you close those doors, you know, you're going to find yourself very frustrated.
Exactly. And I've seen that definitely trying to get into the media field, because it is an all I've seen people who, you know, they made the right connections, they know this person, and bam, they're in the door. Whereas people who may be more qualified, you know, because you don't know anyone, it's harder for them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you see all the time people that you would consider less qualified or less talented, you know, their product isn't as great as yours. You're still getting all these opportunities. It's those relationships.
So in saying all this, I kind of want to switch gears a little bit, and I would like to ask you about a little bit about your book, Living from Within. Could you tell us a little bit about that book?
Well, you know, I wrote that book at a real dark time in my life. When I had all of the trappings of success, I had the nice house, I had the nice car, I had all of those things, but yet I still felt empty. Yet I didn't feel like, I thought, you know, you get a big house, you know, I grew up in the cottage, so, you know, I always dreamed to have a house with upstairs, downstairs. And so I had all these things, but yet I still felt empty. And so living from within was about me finding peace and happiness outside of material things. Because if you grew up in the hood or you grew up poor like I did, you thought that if you had money, if you had success, that will make you happy. And we see all the time today, that's not the answer. You know, you're happy to be how you feel yourself and how you feel yourself. Not, you can have $10 million in the bank and still feel horrible and still feel empty.
Mm-hmm. That's where you see a lot of the suicides. People who have all that, well, on the outside, you think that they're happy, but then, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So on your website as well, you have, which I didn't see any information, so I'm not sure if maybe you're working on this, but you have an affiliate program for your I Am Enough.
Yeah. So one of the things that happened when the t-shirts came out, the t-shirts became so popular there's just been a lot of interest. And so I wanted to make an opportunity for folks that, you know, wanted to help promote the brand, but also be able to earn some revenue by helping to promote the brand. So we have an affiliate program where folks, they can sell their t-shirts, their books, and our conferences, and are able to generate revenue that way. Because I'm a big believer in having multiple streams of income.
Exactly. Okay. So we need to connect with you, definitely, on that.
Yes.
We will be reaching out to you on this week or next week for that opportunity. Okay, so how can people get in contact with you, follow you, and do you have any engagements coming up?
Yes, so you can find me at the website, youareenoughnow.com, on Instagram at HaroldLaFall1, and Facebook is HaroldLaFall. And right now, I have really been focusing on helping entrepreneurs start and grow their businesses. And so we started the I Am Enough Business Startup webinar, and we have a business planning course that will be coming out next month. And then I have another project that I'm really excited about. I'm publishing my first nonfiction book by another author. His name is Apollo, and the book is called If Only You Knew. And it's coming to terms book about a young man finding himself through pain and struggle with his sexuality and his church and his community. So I'm really excited to put that book out there because I see in here so many stories of young people struggling with their sexuality and their faith and their belief system and how that has so many to go into depression and some even considering suicide. And so this book is really, I think, is going to be important to shed some light and to hopefully give some hope to our young folks, and not even just young folks, because we got folks 30, 40, and 50 years old still struggling with what we see around their sexuality in the church.
Is that
book will be out May 15th, If Only You Knew.
So this is an addition, so now you have a publishing company.
Yeah, so I've always had a publishing company. This is the first time I'm publishing a nonfiction book.
A nonfiction book. Okay. to ask a question. This is totally off. So how do you decide what's next for you? Do you have a pattern? Does something have to resonate? Do you go through a thinking pattern? Because you know, all the time you get approached by different people who want you to sell, this to make money, blah, 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 blah. But it seems that everything that touches has a certain purpose to it. How do you go about making decisions about what you want to venture into?
You know, anytime I'm thinking about doing another project or venture, it just has to feel right. Even if the numbers don't make a million, even if it doesn't seem like it's a great idea, if it feels right, I've learned to trust my gut instinct, and that serves me well. Because sometimes, again, we'll talk about a lot of things. And you know how you get those punches that to do this, or but even though that on paper may not look like it makes sense, but I find that when I follow those punches and I follow that leader, things always come out well.
Harold, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Much success. We're going to definitely contact you because I feel a need. Not just talking to myself and my friends, and especially people my age who are trying to do different things, that feeling of inadequacy. So we share your message, and we definitely want to be a part in helping your brain, spreading your brain. So we're going to reach out to you to see how we can make that happen.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it. Okay.
What's the web address again? Give them that again so they can follow you.
It's www.urfmind.com.
Thank you again so much. This is Harold Lepo from the You Are Enough Empowerment Movement. Thank you so much, Harold, for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back.
You've been listening to Let's Face It with Will Strayhorn and Friends. We'll be right back.
This is Betty White. I know you don't need one more thing to worry about, but listen. High blood pressure can cause kidney damage, blindness, heart attack, stroke. And you can have high blood pressure even if you feel all right. 1 in 7 adults has it, but it's easy to get your blood pressure checked, and you can treat it if it is too high. So don't worry about it. Don't ignore it. Just see your doctor and check it out.
For your free booklet, visit the Will Rogers Institute at wrinstitute.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey, y'all. Cedric the Entertainer here with Niecy Nash, taking a break from shooting the Soul Man to introduce you to Patience.
Hi.
Patience is a patient at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
Families never receive a bill from St. Jude for anything because all a family should worry about is helping their child live.
St. Jude won't give up until they end childhood cancer, sickle cell, and other deadly diseases.
Because of you, there is St. Jude.
Learn more at stjude.org.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The
only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
You're now listening to Let's Face It with Will Strayhorn and Friends. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to the show. Still in the field, my girl, Shanika Bell. So you understand?
Yes, please.
I'm understanding what it means to be enough. I'm going to make sure you know what this book. Now, I did get, where's the book that you told me to get? It did come in the mail today. Yeah, for us to write.
Where's the book?
Okay.
I have my book.
Oh, here it is. The Halfway House for Writers. Can't wait. By Valerie Taylor. started, because I've been writing this book for, I believe this fall will be 3 years.
What?
And like I said, every time I sit down and write, I start over.
Once you read her book, you will not start over.
Okay.
Because that's exactly what she tells you. Write out every single thing that you think, good, bad, or indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter that she gives you different prompts. That you, it is, and the book is amazing. It is really amazing.
I can't wait to read it.
Yes.
But the book that I started reading today, which I'm going to be through with probably by tonight, is by David Schwartz, the book called The Magic of Dreaming Big. Steve Harvey was talking about it on the show, and it's amazing. Talking about reasons of the whole people back in the 50s, called what they call, it's about ages, about your age, like who made a particular movie. Just going at you if you're too young or too old. I mean, just, the whole book just like resonated with me. I'm like, really excited. So that combined in with what this book is going to do for me, you got to do something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read the book.
Exactly. So our next guest is coming up, Mr. Brian Bushman. So every year, millions of children are bullied by their peers. I'm a bully. Sometimes the bullying becomes so great that it can transcend the verbal bullying realm into the physical confrontation. Now with social media, bullies can target and abuse people behind the iron curtain of the internet. Brian Bushman is a licensed psychologist. He's here to discuss how bullying can impact children, causing anxiety and depression, and then what we can do about the whole situation. So please help me welcome to the show, Mr. Brian Bushman. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. We can hear you fine. So thank you so much for coming on the show. So what was your, what's your story about dealing with the anxiety and the depression behind bullying? What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I think a big piece of it is that nobody ever tells you how to do acceptance. You know, we always talk about how we need to accept things. But the problem really is that, you know, in our society, acceptance is code for get over it, which I don't think is what Buddha or Jesus or Confucius really meant by it. I'm not opposed to fixing what needs to be fixed, but the purpose of the book and why I spent about 8 years writing it was to do three things. One, to identify and hopefully prevent patterns that create suffering in our lives. Two, to find the overlap among the voices of wisdom in our life, religious, philosophic, and that's pretty important, especially today when things are so divisive. And then three, hopefully give people a step-by-step guide they can use, regardless of what they do or don't believe about God, to help them develop themselves.
Okay. In your view, how does modern society inspire or create suffering? And actually, let me thank you and welcome you to the show. Mm-hmm. I'm Shanika.
Well, I think a big part of it is that in our society we have what I like to call a beer commercial mentality, which is in every beer commercial I've ever seen, everybody's very attractive and everybody's, you know, having this amazing time, and they're always doing something that is kind of incompatible with beer drinking, like rollerblading or something like that. But I think most of the time people watch that and they say, they feel kind of ripped off. They feel like life has kind of denied them something. And it's the comparison with that that is so problematic. And I think this leads right into bullying. And one of the problems that we see with teenagers in particular in bullying is that there is a lot of comparison, especially that happens with social media right now. And I think it's very difficult for kids, especially kids in junior high, to not compare themselves to other people, because that adolescent brain is so much in a kind of herd mentality that it's really hard for them to step out of that, step out of what might be going on, and kind of look at the bigger picture of things. See, we take it for granted as adults. Hey, these people are not going to be there later in your life. What they say doesn't matter. But to the adolescent brain, it's very difficult to square that with what they see in social media and how social media typically compares.
Yeah, that's
ahead. So moving towards the children, the cool age children, because I was saying in the introduction, I was bullied. I would say probably through middle school, which was to me was like sixth grade all the way through probably like 11th grade. So what are some signs that you can tell that your child may be bullied? Because I never told my parents.
Right. Because you went into probably a shutdown mode where you don't really talk to people.
Exactly.
So that would be one thing that you would want to think about is you want to say, okay, is this child acting different from baseline? Are they withdrawing from activities that they used to enjoy? Are they withdrawing from social relationships that are healthy? Are they spending much more time in secretive behavior, usually online? So you want to just be in tune with the child because a lot of them aren't going to come to you and say, hey, I feel horrible. You know, before my segment, you had that great commercial on the air about, hey, today I learned X, Y, and Z, and there were all these negative things. Well, because of shame, nobody wants to go up to their parents and say, hey, I learned I'm worthless today. So you've got to be in tune enough with your kids to know when there's this change in their baseline presentation so you can kind of prevent some of the problems before they really take hold.
Now, what about the flip side? Suppose you have a child who, you know, you may think is the bully. What are some signs you can look for that?
Oh, that's a great point because, you know, we never talk about that, do we? I mean, you know, there was that movie that came out years ago, Mean Girls, which is just a great example of how that happens. On my blog, I have like an entire section about what to do if you find yourself the parent of a kid who might be bullying. And I think you got to understand that it's about dominance. It's about being able to say, I'm going to stay on top so somebody else can stay below me. See, every queen bee needs a sycophant, needs somebody to, you know, what we find is when we actually do research on these kind of dynamics, especially in junior high, is that you have people at the top who have about 15-20% of kids that are never going to be popular, but they keep them in this one down position because they need somebody who's going to look up to them and do that kind of thing. So a lot of what I talk with parents about is I talk with them a lot about social media and the good and bad. And I'm going to take kind of a controversial position here.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is this, that you can't really drive a social media account until you can drive a car.
No.
So that means that I think that kids younger, especially younger than 15, aren't, for the most part, mature enough to handle being on Facebook by themselves. I mean, it's just like we might allow a 15-year-old driver's permit, you know, where somebody can sit next to them and drive with them. But, you know, we don't usually allow 14-year-olds to drive a car. And I think that is a significant problem with bullying is that we're allowing these junior high students who aren't mature enough to handle the power of social media, we're giving them this. I mean, it's like giving kind of a young kid, forgive me for saying it like this, but giving them a gun and then expecting nothing bad to happen. Social media is a loaded gun for kids younger than the age of 15. And my take is that most of them aren't going to be able to survive it. And so we as parents have to say, look, am I borrowing trouble by allowing my kid, especially Snapchat? You don't even want to get me started on Snapchat, which I kind of refer to as cover your ass chat. There's no other point for it than to cover your tracks and to eliminate kind of transparency. And so, yeah, I get a little confused about it because I just see so many great kids that get involved in bullying, but they're really not bullies. They just kind of got swept along because we gave them something very powerful without any guidelines of how to deal with it.
Okay. I have some friends who in the past have spoke about their children in school and have had situations where they felt like their child had been bullied and then they took it to administration and some cases, administration didn't really do what the bullying policy was put in place to do, if you will. Do you think that schools are doing enough to combat the problem and to really support those children who may be being bullied?
Well, I think that many of them are really, really trying. But part of the problem is that a lot of the bullying does take place online. You know, I'm old enough now that basically the stuff that kids post against each other was the stuff that was written in bathroom walls on the bathroom stalls. Now that stuff has gone viral. And I think that a lot of the time the administration is trying to do what they can, but a lot of the stuff has gone viral, so to speak. And there's a lot of the stuff that they can't do much about directly because it's kind of like it's already the cat's out of the bag already. And so it's kind of like a lot of families that I work with, the administration's like, well, we'll talk to everybody and make sure it doesn't happen again. But unfortunately, a lot of the kids who get bullied, what the research shows is that they unintentionally, and I really want to emphasize this because this is not always true, they unintentionally do little things to stay on the mean girl menu, so to speak, which is they tend to be overreactive, they tend to act in such a way that continues to put them with a target on their back. And so one of the things we've got to do is, yeah, we have to make sure that the school does what it can, but we also have to make sure that the kid is not responding in a way that's going to keep the bullying going, because then they isolate themselves and who knows where it takes them.
Okay, so you say respond in a way that's going to keep the bullying going. Clarify a little bit what you mean by that.
Okay, so, sure. So let's say that I've got a 14-year-old who is having stuff spread about her. Rumors, and that would hurt anybody, right? And so what she does is she goes online to correct the record, so to speak, and to set everything straight. And so what ends up happening is when she sets the record straight, she also ends up talking about other people who then feel like they have to respond in kind, and now we're off to the races. Now we've got a lot of people, and I'll give you another quick example. So let's say I've got three kids that are friends, and kid A and B, we got kid A, kid B, kid C. Kid B and C were friends, but now they're fighting. So what ends up happening is kid B goes up to kid A and says, I can't stand kid C. And kid B doesn't say, well, you should go talk to kid C. Kid A instead spreads kind of messages between kid B and C, which inevitably ends up getting misinterpreted. And then we have kids who are pulled in and are accused of being bullied when, in fact, they just don't know how to set boundaries.
Okay. I got that. I have a question there. So, and this is just out of curiosity, I would wonder if kids who are bullied, Do you typically find that they have adverse situations at home? Are they acting out typically? Is it something, some type of reflection sometimes on their parents or home situation?
Sometimes, but not always, because most of the parents that I work with are really good parents that are just trying to – they're just doing the best they can. I think that there's a lot of really great kids and great families that I've worked with where that is not the case. But if a kid doesn't feel like they feel connected to anybody at home, it's really not surprising that they turn to other ways of getting a feeling of being heard. And so that's when the real bad stuff tends to happen, is when a kid feels really disconnected at home, and then as a way to understand stuff, they go online, and then some things tend to happen that create some problems, and that's when secrecy takes over, and then we have some really negative outcomes that happen after that.
Okay, of course, here lately on the news, we have seen that there have been children that have been that have committed suicide at very young ages.
Very, very young ages.
Why do you feel like what do you think is happening that takes over for those children at 7, 8, 9 that pushes them? Because that's still, some of those are still elementary. We haven't even made it to middle school at that age.
Yeah.
But what takes over to push them to commit suicide?
Well, I think there's a couple of things, because it's a complicated issue, so I don't want to simplify something very complicated. But if I could just hit a couple of points. First of all, I think that there is a level of disconnection in our society that is adding to things. I mean, we're more connected yet more separate than we have ever been in our history. But secondly, and I talk a little bit about this on my blog, which if anyone's interested, it's all the information is free. You can go to www.drbrianbushman.com. But one of the other things that we notice is that the suicide rate is getting progressively younger. And obviously we don't absolutely know why that is, but the only compelling sociological evidence we have is that social media is starting to get younger and younger too. As kids are exposed to social media earlier, the suicidal ideation and self-harm behaviors tend to go up. Now, that's correlation. That's not causation. I want to be very clear about that. But that's why I've kind of taken the stand that I have of, we got to be very careful about what kind of social media kids have access to, because just over the last 15 years or so, we've seen this suicide rate start to become more and more of a problem the younger and younger the kid. And there's no real compelling evidence for that other than the fact that social media has become so much more accepted as kids are even 8, 9, 10, just like you talked about. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to oversimplify something that is actually very complex. But I think if you're trying to pin me down to a couple of things, one is the level of disconnection in our society and the discord in our society. Oh, my gosh. I mean, the level of discord we've seen just this week. And then secondly, the infiltration of social media and how kids are feeling disconnected and go to that instead, I would say, are a couple of things to consider.
Let's go back to you talking about acceptance earlier. So this really is not just for the youth. This goes, I mean, I've dealt with this in the workplace with grown adults up in their 60s and 70s. So what can people do to start developing a more accepting attitude, which I think changes the love problem?
Right, and I think this goes why I wanted to write kind of this book about how do you develop acceptance. First, let me tell you what acceptance is not. Acceptance is not liking your pain or, worse, thinking you somehow deserve it. It's simply an acknowledgement of what you're experiencing without adding judgment. Now, here's what I mean. The truth is, we don't just say to ourselves, right now I'm sad. Instead, we say something like, right now I'm sad and I can't stand it. Did you hear that little judgment creep in at the end? In fact, you can usually tell someone is about to do something dumb by how intensely they tell themselves they can't stand it, whatever they're going through. And because being sad is true, it's a real experience, many times we assume that the I can't stand it must also be true. And then while we're stuck in that judgmental state of mind, we do something impulsive that makes our life more complicated than it needs to be. We get drunk. We yell at our spouse. We quit our jobs. Another quick example, like let's say I've got a mother and daughter that are yelling at each other. It's not that just that the mother says to herself, I'm getting upset. She says to herself subconsciously, I'm getting upset and my daughter is a good-for-nothing hobo that's going to live in my basement until she's 45. Right? If you notice the little judgment that creeped in there at the end. You know, we don't just acknowledge our emotions. We say, I feel this way and I can't stand it, or this is horrible, or I'm horrible. And then we end up doing something impulsive that we later regret. And I think that that bleeds over into how we treat each other. We don't just kind of, you know, there was the old song, and I'm dating myself horribly now, but that old song of ain't no good guy, ain't no bad guy, there's just you and me and we just disagree. Right. I mean, that's been kind of lost in our society right now, and I think that's tragic, because then it informs how we have a relationship not only with other people, but with how we have it with ourselves. It's okay to feel it in a way, but we don't always have to do something with it. Sometimes just simply being mindful, breathing in and allowing it to pass is really what we need to do. But so often we just get impulsive and we just have to do something, which ends up creating a lot of suffering, according to Buddhism and most of the great religious traditions that we grew up with.
Okay. Would you say that within this generation, and even in the younger generation, would you say that problem solving is lacking? The
yeah.
Problem solving.
Yeah, but the more interesting question is why. I think that sometimes, and I don't want to overgeneralize, but sometimes the reason why sometimes kids don't go through the problem solving process is because their parents may dictate to them, well, this is how we're going to solve the problem, instead of collaborating with the kids and saying, this is the problem. Let's together brainstorm some ways to solve the problem. I did my dissertation on how to teach kids problem-solving skills, in fact, and it was very interesting because if you could have a solid relationship with a parent or somebody that had a good mentoring relationship, that you could come at a problem together and you could brainstorm together, those kids tended to become better problem solvers. But kids that either had a very harsh relationship with a parent or a somewhat neglectful relationship with a parent, they tended to just go with the first impulse that came into their mind. And so I think that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about it being a snowflake generation, which I think is kind of unfortunate in some ways. But I think the better question is, how do we help kids solve problems? And that's going to come by having an attuned relationship where you're able to collaborate with them instead of just handing down exactly what the kid's going to do. It's worth the investment. It takes more time, but it actually saves time in the long run.
Exactly. Well, how can people get a copy of your book, and then how can people follow you?
Okay, sure. So the best way is to go on my website. Again, it's www.drbrianbushman.com, and Brian spelled with a Y. And there is on my main page a copy to my Amazon page, which has the book Becoming Okay When You're Not Okay. That's probably the easiest thing. And actually, for the next 4 days, it's free on Kindle. If you have a Kindle device, you can download it for free. I think it expires in the next 4 days. So if you want to download it for free, it's on there. I'm more interested in getting the information out there than I am interested in getting money. I'd rather just disseminate it. So all I'm asking is that people just kind of write a review on Amazon and share it with somebody that you think would need it. But you can follow me on Facebook. Again, Brian Bushman, BRYANBUSHMAN, or going on my website for the drbrianbushman.com, and it's just on the main page there. You can click on it, and it'll take you over to the first couple of chapters that you can read. And like I said, it's for free on Kindle right now for the next, I think, 3 or 4 days. So if anybody's interested in that, then, you know, I think that's a useful resource. And if you're interested in bowling, you can also go on that same website, hit my blog, and I have 3 different articles on there about bowling and some of the things that we talked about. So if that's kind of more what you're interested in, then that's a possibility as well.
Awesome, awesome. We would definitely have to have you back on the show. in the future.
Please do. It's been nice talking to you guys, and I really appreciate the discussion and being willing to bounce ideas off of people, because I think that to be able to talk is really what the nation needs right now.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day. Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You've been listening to Let's Face It with Will Strayhorn and Friends. We'll be right back.
What's going on, everybody? This is Neo for Lifebeat. The music industry fights AIDS. When you're drunk or high, all you want to think about is what feels good. But think about this. Two Americans under the age of 21 are infected with HIV every hour of every day. Don't become another statistic. Use protection. To learn more about HIV and AIDS, go on to www.lifebeat.org. Respect yourself. Protect yourself.
Hi, this is Terry Crews, actor, former football player, game show host, father of five, and all-around big dude. I'm also an expert on drama. I know all kinds of drama. There's the good kind that comes with having a house full of kids. There's the bad kind, like season-ending injuries. There's the necessary kind, like having an agent in Hollywood. And there's silly drama, like the drama around my percolating pectorals. And then there's the drama you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your high school diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org.
Or text DIPLOMA to 97779. Message and data rates may apply. Reply STOP to opt out. That's DIPLOMA to 97779. And leave the drama to actors like me.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.
You're now listening to Let's Face It with Will Strayhorn and Friends. Now back to the show.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's show. I hope you get a chance during the week to visit our site at livewithwill.com for up-to-date show information, including exclusive opportunities and exciting upcoming interviews. Be sure to tune in next week, same place, same time, for another informative show of real people, real topics, real talk. Let's face it,